Hello, listeners, and welcome to this edition of the Swim Out podcast. This is the first episode of 2024 and the start of our fifth series. Today, we'll be talking all about training for your open water swimming event. Presenting with me today, I've got Amy Enyon, ultra long distance swimmer, coach and social media superstar known as Amy.swims. Hello, Amy.
Hello, Vicky. It's great to be back and I am so excited about this episode. Coming up today, we have Ray Gibbs, who explains how to get your stroke correct.
So, the eight laws of learning: explanation, demonstration, imitation, repetition, 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 repetition.
Anna McCarthy tells us why she loves a swim camp.
So I think these camps are great for introducing to other people who are doing the exact same thing and they're thinking the exact same way.
Mandy Bodymead from Dover Channel Training sets out their ethos.
Expect the unexpected is probably the biggest thing. We try and keep it interesting and motivating for people.
We chat with Mark Sheridan, whose local group is going from strength to strength.
It's become a very good support network and avenue for inspiration. And now we've got to a stage where some of the group are going to compete at events.
And we hear from Jonathan Cowie about his struggles with his sofa.
I know how much training I need to do. I know how I should be motivating myself. I know how to set myself smart and achievable goals. But for some reason, I seem to be stuck to my sofa.
A quick reminder to you all to please give us some likes and feedback on your podcast provider's app. Good ratings give the podcast a higher profile and help more people to discover us.
You're listening to Swim Out, a podcast about the fabulous world of outdoor swimming.
Amy, you and I are training for similar distance events, but we train in quite a different way. Tell me about how you approach your training.
So I do a lot of my training solo. I'm a coach, so I coach myself. I do a lot of my speed work by myself in the pool. I do all of my long swims solo through the summer in different lakes. I have started recently going along to a master's swim team for a little bit more social and community aspect, but I mostly work alone. How about you, Vicky?
Oh, I'm the complete opposite, really. So I'm a club member, so I train with Out to Swim all through the year. I do add to that with a little bit of swimming on my own at West Reservoir, but I also do Dover Channel training at the weekends. So I'm very rarely swimming on my own, really. I think I worry about getting lonely.
Me too. It's been really nice working with a master's swim team recently to kind of offset that a little bit.
So let's get cracking. Shannon House Keegan is a swimmer, podcaster and coach based in Oregon in America. Her Marathon Swim Stories podcast is a true treasure trove of tales, as well as being a fantastic resource for anyone interested in open water swimming. Shannon has completed many, many marathon swims herself, including the Scar Lake Swim and swimming Lake Tahoe. But today we want to talk to her about her coaching business. Welcome to Swim Out, Shannon. It's great to have you with us.
Thank you so much for the invitation. I'm delighted to be here.
Vicky and I both wanted to talk to you today to kick off this episode about training. So you train people in person, but you also do a lot of your training and coaching online. Could you start us off by explaining how that works?
First off, I want to just attribute my coaching style and philosophy to Swim Mastery, which is a global organization of swim coaches. The change that we seek to make in our stroke to be more efficient, which is what we prize in Swim Mastery and all of us look for, right, is to do more with less, is a change that we need to do in our own bodies. And it's not something that someone standing over a pool deck can do for you. You need to actually go into your body and basically seek feedback from the water as to what is going to be the most powerful to change your stroke. So that's coaching that I can do with anyone, anywhere. And I've had success with swimmers who I've never, ever, ever met in person swimming 40 kilometer swims, and some people doing their first 10Ks and the gamut. And then, of course, there's training plans and supporting people with the mindset piece and all of the components of feed planning. There's just so many aspects to marathon swim training and even just getting people up and started with swimming, which is what I delight in. It's just helping people find out what they're capable of in the water. I feel like it's so cliche because I say it all the time, but it's important for me to just throw that in there.
Yeah, I noticed that in one of your recent emails, you said that you can achieve more with less stuff, less time and less effort. And that sounds absolutely amazing. But I mean, tell me a little bit more about the process of how you make that happen.
I guess, first of all, we start with teaching people that the six fundamental skills of swimming efficiency, which are just the three shapes that we make with our body, and we tune our acuity to achieving those shapes consistently under stress, like stress being a tempo, like a faster tempo is a kind of stress. Breathing at different rates is a kind of stress. So all of that helps inform our body, ourselves, of how our body works in the water. And I guess we talk about the spiral of learning. So it's like you can learn these three shapes, but it's not like then you're done. There's synchronizing them efficiently, synchronizing them all in all different ways, adding in breathing, which is its own, you know, water is a medium in which we can't survive. And we need to credit that. And we need to allow ourselves to know that there's survival instincts that kick in. You know, we can be extremely comfortable in the water, but we still could brace against the water to get oxygen because we have to. And so we have to tell our brain it's going to be okay. People, I think, tend to be more kicking and pulling machines to swim instead of using their torsos, their engine, to actually, you know, lever yourself over top of the water.
And then how many hours a week does that take?
Yeah, I'd say instead of it being an hours a week thing, we need to consider the quality of the time that we're spending in the water. So it depends on how good you're being at the quality. So it's not like, it's not a volume isn't necessarily going to get you there. There is an amount of volume that's needed, but you've got to be careful about putting in just, I want to say, because it's common in industry, like garbage yardage, right? That's not, you're just reinforcing bad habits if you're just swimming the way that you've always swam. So I take my swimmers down a path of having learning practices. So they're practices where they're very intentionally trying to work on building the right motor habits. I mean, I've swam for as little as 3 hours a week and done that, you know, each week. And maybe here and there done what I call milestone swims, where we maybe that more kind of that applied practice and then gone on to swim for 22, 25 hours. One thing that I love about it is that I don't ever dread going to the pool the way that I used to kind of before I learned the swim mastery style. I would be like, oh, I got to get in 3 hours today. And what am I going to do? Do I do X number of 200s or do I want to do 500 repeats? And that's not like that at all for me now. It's like problem solving and little like treats. I don't know. It's much more exciting way to practice. And there's times where your brain gets tired and you really can't learn anymore that day. And it's okay to be like, well, I'm done. I'm compromising my training by trying to push my brain out of my comfort zone.
So when you're coaching people through that, the learning practice and the mindful type of swimming that you've just described, how do you help them to figure out how much training to do?
What I like to do, instead of thinking of it as a how much volume do I need or how much, you know, how fast do I need to be going, it's a constant training of efficiency. And then for the person's confidence, there's an amount of maybe distance that they'll personally want to build in. And we always have the talk of like how that could be compromising their efficiency if they're just kind of letting those old habits kind of creep back in, you know, into the open water season. Maybe it's longer, you know, lake swims or things. And so it's whatever they need to build the confidence for whatever their personal goal is. I don't think that there's, you know, it's ever the same for everybody.
Tell us about a person that you've coached that's really impressed you and why they've impressed you.
So one of my swimmers had come from a background of triathlon before she came to me. She'd done a 5K, but came out of it with all kinds of shoulder pain and issues with her neck. And so we walked through fundamental skills. We can always, I guess, when I'm working with swimmers who have pain, we can usually get rid of that within a couple of weeks. The commitment to the process, it's like every month on the month, she schedules her virtual coaching call, sends me videos from every angle that I didn't even know that you could get from. She'll think of new ones and keeps me on top of it. And she's always following up after practices, telling me what she feels in the water, which is so important.
That is wonderful. Yeah, that just sounds like the perfect athlete, yeah. The perfect client to have. Yeah. How do you manage to fit all of your own training in around all of the coaching, all of the podcasting?
I don't have a problem with necessarily fitting in swimming as long as I'm intrigued and excited about going in and working on something to improve my efficiency. And if I have a goal that I'm working towards, it's not like fitting in 3 hours a week or something. That's not necessarily the hard part. For me, it's kind of like balancing that inspiration and like having those clients that push me so that I'm continuing to push myself, so that I'm continuing to learn in my own practice so that I can share more with them. I guess in my heart of hearts, I just want to make more people swimmers and help people who are like, meh, I don't really necessarily have to swim. I'm still working on my husband. trying to get them into the water and, you know, help them realize what an amazing medium it is, both for, you know, just walking away from our trenches, day-to-day life, the technology, you know, all these things that are amazing and they enable so much, but to get a break from all of that and just be with yourself in the water, I think is a gift that I want to give to everybody in the world.
It's just lovely to share what you love,
yeah,
isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. Yep.
Shannon, thank you very much.
If you want to find out more about Shannon's work, her website and Instagram is called Intrepid Water, all one word. Go and check her out. And as always, long versions of the interviews and any links can be found at swimout.net. As part of both of our preparations, me for my English channel and Geneva Swims, and Vicky for Manhattan, we've both been working on our technique with Ray Gibbs in his tank in Canary Wharf. Ray has more than 20 years' experience as a swimming teacher, and he believes that getting your technique right for your specific goal will unlock your potential in the water. He films you, discusses your stroke, and sets drills to practice between appointments. Vicky went to see Ray for her checkup swim.
Here I am at the tank for my third session. Hello, Ray.
Hi, Vicky.
Welcome to Swim Out. So can you tell us a bit about the tank and how it all works?
Okay, so it's essentially a treadmill for swimming. So I'm sure lots of the listeners have run on a treadmill. Essentially, you swim on the spot. So I give you an idea of where I want you to swim in the pool. I film the clients from many angles, up to 7 angles, but usually 5. And we go around the camera angles on the initial consultation, 1 by 1 or 2 by 2, and just take a look at where the swimmer is. And usually by the time I've seen a swimmer from all angles, I've highlighted an area or areas we want to work on. I never throw lots of information at the swimmer. It's always 1 or 2 things at a time. And I send people away with some homework.
What do you think are the benefits of coaching with a tank?
The main thing is being able to film underwater, being able to see the swimmer from many angles, and more importantly, for the swimmer to see themselves from lots of angles, because I've got instant playback here. As you can see, I've got a screen on the side of the pool, so, and you know how it's done, Vicky.
Yeah,
by the time you finish swimming, I've already queued up the footage with a voiceover on the screen, and you can see exactly what I'm talking about, so it's instant feedback.
So I think it's time for my session now. I've been doing my drills, and last time we were working on my catch, so hopefully you'll see a big improvement in my catch.
As long as you've been practicing, there will be a big improvement.
I have practiced a bit.
Right. It's nice in here, actually, today.
Okay, so you were drilling there, but that particular drill is essentially swimming. You're doing it without fins, without paddles, without any assistance. You're performing excellent front crawl strokes, but you're doing it by numbers. And by stopping you at the point of catch with the recovering arm above the head, we're really defining the parameters of the stroke. It's important that you do stop. There's a couple of occasions there where you did a slow stroke.
Yeah.
I'd like you to really define that point, okay? Because what we're gonna do now is add in the fluidity. A rotated body and an early catch, and you're absolutely achieving that.
So the 8 laws of learning: explanation, demonstration, imitation, repetition, 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 repetition. And so the magic happens in between the lessons. You must practice.
Thank you, Ray. I find this process so interesting, and it's great to see the films which you email across of what you're doing underwater. It also helps me that I can look back and see what it was I was doing. So what's my homework?
So your homework is, I've given you a particular drill. I call it elbow pause drill. And what elbow pause is essentially a front crawl stroke, but you interrupt it. And when you swim with the club, and when you do your longer swims, I still want you to think about that visualization of your elbow being pulled out by a thread. So that's what I'm after.
I'll do my best, I really will. So what sort of swimmers come to see you?
All sorts, and I'm really pleased they do. So complete non-swimmers, people that can't swim at all, not even a length of breaststroke, right up to Ironman champions, age group champions, triathletes, wild swimmers, pleasure swimmers, the whole list. And I'm really pleased because I think if I only taught one tribe, I'd go slightly dotty.
Tell us about someone that you coached who's really impressed you and how they impressed you.
Yeah, so there's a guy called Nick, and Nick came to see me and he was about to retire. He's 59 years old and he was very much of the old school. He did some sport at university and then raised the family, didn't do any sport until he was 59. So he couldn't even swim a single length of any stroke. So he came to see me and went through this. It was a very similar process to you, but he was a bit more, obviously more of a blank canvas. And after a full winter of lessons, I said, well, I think you should enter a 5K open water swim. And he entered the Dr. Doc swim, which is in September. And he did it. And he did it skins. And when he finished the race, I said, how'd you get on, Nick? And he said, oh, a bit disappointed with my time. I said, Nick, you couldn't swim a length not so long ago, and you've just done a 5K open water swim. And he said, oh, yeah, okay. Anyway, this year he did the 10K Dr. Doc. So not a particularly fit guy, someone who hadn't come from any swimming background at all, and did a 10-kilometer swim. Now he can do that because he's learnt a very efficient long-distance stroke, a 21st century stroke, if you like. He immediately springs to mind. I'm actually going for a beer with him on Friday because he wants to think about his next challenge.
So how do you help people to prepare for long swims?
I get them to the point where the physics and the biomechanics of the stroke are as good as they can be. And then I'll pass them back to their performance coach. Sessions will then start to bear fruit. I don't coach people, I teach people to swim. And then my work is done and I send them on their way. Although a lot of people come back and have a checkup every couple of months or 3 months just to make sure they're on the right track.
Thanks, Ray. That's really great. See you next time.
I'll see you soon.
I love those videos. They're so helpful for remembering exactly what you should be doing for your homework. I'm off to see Ray for my checkup in March. I want to take my technique from very efficiency focused to a bit more speed focused, so it will be really interesting to see what Ray suggests. If you think Ray could help you too, you can find his website by searching Swim Canary Wharf.
You're listening to Swim Out, a podcast about the fabulous world of outdoor swimming.
So far, we've met Shannon and Ray, who are looking at your technique and helping you prepare your strokes for the big day. But what other ways are there to train?
Well, I like a good swim camp. I've only ever been on one with the King Swimmers, but it was such a fantastic week for preparation and for spending time with like-minded swimmers.
I love a good swim camp too. I've done some with the King Swimmers and also many beautiful swimming holidays with Swim Trek.
Camps and holidays are definitely getting more popular. They aren't just for elite or professional athletes anymore. Every year, hundreds of swimmers and triathletes attend training camps, from small, local, community-run ones to commercial, Olympian-coached international destinations.
Ireland has a buoyant open water scene and with it a fine offering of swim camps. Amy caught up with Anna McCarthy, who's a regular at the aptly named cold water camp Hit the Wall in Carlingford Loch. She's also attended the notorious Cork Distance Week, a training camp based in the west of Ireland. And this year she's going to be one of the volunteers helping to run it smoothly. Over to you, Amy.
So what do you think are the biggest benefits of going along to these camps?
I think when you start training for a very big long swim, you're out there on your own. Some people will stay with you for an hour or two, but basically nobody's going to be staying with you for 4 or 5 hours, you know, unless you find a training partner. And at times you can feel very alone. And then you think, am I totally crazy? Or is there anyone else doing this in the world? So I think these camps are great for introducing to other people who are doing the exact same thing. And they're thinking the exact same way. And they're also filling in the gaps for you in your training or your thinking, because a lot of it is so mental, you know, and they really help you with that. You form friendships all over the world to the point that no matter where you go, if you want to go for a nice long swim or do anything, you could pick up the phone to anybody, you know. So that's really super. Because sometimes you can get a bit stuck and you think, well, I've done that and what's next? Or and then when you meet people who've done so much, you can see what the next step is. And as you're not the only person in the world doing it, it now qualifies you as being not insane.
If
one does it, it's all a bit suspect, I've noticed, you know.
But when there's a group of you.
But when there's a group around, people come up and they chat, oh, what are you doing? You know, but if it's you on your own, it's like, oh, what's she doing out there?
We talked a little bit about the mental side of marathon swimming, and it is such a mental game. Do you see that some of the camps you've attended, does it help with that? Does it help your mental preparation?
I think it does a lot, because again, you're out there on your own. And then sometimes I try to compose a book, you know, and then after the first page, I'm finished, you know, because a wave hits you or some, you see a seal or something, you know. So what's helped me a lot is talking to other people and identifying the fact that it is a mental game as well, because when I started off, I didn't realize that, you know, I just thought it was all about training and swimming and you did the training and you got there, you know. And then I didn't realize that your head was doing its best to stop you. You hear about strategies for overcoming your head or recognizing how your head works when you're swimming. So for me, it's the first 4 hours of get out, go home, get out, go home. And then after 4 hours, everything kind of settles down. My thoughts are drifting off again to other things. And as one person said to me, it's all about silencing that voice in your head and not letting it get too big as you swim on.
So what do you think is the biggest aspect of preparation that kind of the camps have done for you?
Well, cold water acclimatization. I think that's very important, you know. For me, that's my one big weakness was it took me a long time to get used to the cold. And I think both camps are excellent for that. You're in cold water, you're with people, given support, so you know you can push yourself without actually killing yourself, you know. And then you know that people are keeping an eye on you and they know your physical and mental state as well. And that helps you then to push yourself just maybe that little bit further. So you do things that you wouldn't necessarily do on your own, especially when you're new to it. You just need a bit of support around you and people who say you can do it, you know.
Yeah.
Or that I'm doing it, therefore you can do it, you know.
It's almost the best kind of peer pressure, isn't it? Safe peer pressure.
If you don't complete it, that's another thing that people talk about in the swim camps, and it is quite devastating. You've put a lot of money and a lot of time, you know, and you've told a lot of people.
I mean, I think they're very supportive environments, almost miniature communities, aren't they?
Yes.
Anna McCarthy ending that report from Ireland.
Now for an all too real training dilemma faced by everyone at one time or another. Jonathan Cowie from Outdoor Swimmer magazine discusses his current training.
My resolution for the year is to swim the length of the major lakes in the Lake District. But at the moment, I'd be lucky to doggy paddle across a couple of tarns. I know how much training I need to do. I know how I should be motivating myself. I know how to set myself smart and achievable goals. But for some reason, I seem to be stuck to my sofa. From my front door, I can be in the water in the swimming pool in 10 minutes, allowing for a quick navigation of the changing village and assuming that I don't get stuck behind a queue for legs, bums and tums at reception. But any excuse, and I have many, and I will ditch training and go and do something else instead. How do I love avoiding training? Let me count the ways. I don't feel fit enough for club training, so I have to go to a public session to build up my fitness. But the public session is too busy. I'm too full. I really shouldn't have popped into Greg's on the way back from town. I'm too hungry. It'd be dangerous to go swimming, so nutritionally compromised. It's too dark. I'm ready for bed now. It's 5:30 p.m. It's too early, and I've never been very good at early morning exercise. It's too late, and I won't have time to eat my tea. The dog needs walking. I'm too busy watching old episodes of This Morning with Richard and Judy on YouTube. I'm too tired. The fire is too cosy and warm. I've had too much coffee, and I haven't had enough coffee. I really should finish that Broadchurch box set. Of course, when I do finally make it to the pool, I have a great swim and book in for the next day. Maybe I will swim at least one of the lakes this year.
The sofa wins sometimes, but I'm sure you'll make your challenge this year, Jonathan.
Get in touch with the Swim Out podcast on Facebook and Instagram.
For me, my master swimming club, Out to Swim, brings me my baseline fitness, and I train with them throughout the year because they're my club. But lots of swimmers want a long-distance focused approach with less random butterfly sets like the one that I got last night.
An alternative method of training is with a local group who provide structured sessions. There are a variety of different setups and styles.
Local to me in North London, we've got Red Top, The Swim Doctor, Swim for Try. Those come to mind. And often a lake or a pool will develop a formal training group, which you can join for a slightly more structured sessions. Amy, have you got any local groups?
I know of Team Mermaids in and around London, who are a group of friends and swimmers that do structured sessions, cold dips in the Lidos, and open water swims together. And I also go along to a group that gets together at Charlton Lido at weekends. We mainly focus on marathon distance preparation, but we've got a few masters swimmers as well. It's an informal group created by Mark Sheridan, himself a prolific swimmer, Triple Crown and a collection of British firsts among his many achievements. He has served as the British Long Distance Swimming Association Honorary President and has swum their entire calendar of swims. As a latecomer to swimming, Mark also perfected his stroke in the tank with Ray Gibbs. That's actually how I got in touch with Ray and started working with him too. You chatted with Mark recently. Over to you, Vicky.
Hello, Mark. Welcome to Swim Out.
How are you doing?
I'm good. So we're talking about training today, and you've got a small group based at Charlton Lido in southeast London, which trains together fairly regularly. Can you tell me about the group and how it sort of came about?
I started marathon swimming about 12 years ago and discovered, just through swimming locally in Kent, I discovered there's not a 50 metre pool in Kent, and the nearest 50 metre pool to Kent is Charlton Lido. And Charlton Lido, probably one of the best pools in the world because it's heated to 21, 22 all year round. So even in January when there's snow or ice, you can still get in the water. It's about the same as a good lake would be in the summer. So it's great training, and it's 50 metre, very clean. And I started going there about 7 or 8 years ago, and using that as my rep pool in the winter to get my speed up. And what's happened over the years is you get to meet similar faces, similar people in similar speeds in the fast lane. And what tends to happen is on the weekend, a few of us will get together, typically on a Sunday, sometimes Saturday as well, but definitely over the Christmas period, we get together a lot more. But it's quite a loose group, but we just tend to do reps. I tend to set the session either hundreds or 200s because they prefer just to swim hard, and they like to look at me to plan the session because I can't come more than up to two. I tend to just set it either hundreds or 200s after a warm up, and we tend to swim for 5K. And over the, I would say over the last few years, it's grown. Some weeks busier than others, but we tend to get, sometimes we might get 9 or 10, others we get less than that, but that's typically how we work it, and some are faster than others, but generally we find a happy medium. And yeah, it's become a very good support network and avenue for inspiration. And now we've got to a stage where some of the group are going to compete at events in the summer together. Last year there was a group of us from Charlton who went to do the Largo Daughter Swim in Italy. It was about 14k. There's another group going there this year, and this year I'm actually wrecking an altitude camp
in Europe because I prefer pool swimming. So with a view to maybe next year, a few of us going on that. It's become a victim of its own success, but it's now sort of proliferating into races and other training.
So what sort of swimmers come to the group?
It's generally, I would say, swimmers that are capable of swimming 100 metres easily within 1:45 and are based within a reasonable mileage. It takes me 30 minutes to drive there, but the pool's so good, I don't think twice about driving there. So it's mainly people based in the southeast.
And do you think that the group helps you all to keep motivated?
I think we learn from each other. I definitely think the motivation helps. And we have a little sort of WhatsApp group, tend to WhatsApp each other, say, I'm in the pool this Sunday. So yes, it definitely helps to motivate each other, especially there's a group of people who probably wouldn't have swum more than an hour or 3K are now easily doing 5K on a Sunday who would typically never do that. And since that group's been set up, we've had, you know, English Channel successes and Lake Geneva successes and others.
And do you actually book a lane or just wing it?
I thought about booking a lane, but booking a lane's expensive and then you're committed and you're committed week in, week out, where it's more kind of just casual public session and we tend to be there as early as possible on any given weekend. So we're very fortunate. There's four very wide lanes and we don't end up with head of breaststroke brigade. No, very rarely.
Do any of your swimmers that you've grown, have any of them particularly impressed you?
Yes, there's a lady who joined the group about a year ago called Julia Maguire, who has since done Jersey de France. And the January just gone, we did 100 hundreds for a charity swim that I organise every year. And she did both days, the Saturday and the Sunday, and won swimmer of the weekend. She got the bug for long distance swimming. She's got a young family, but she got the bug for it. She's now setting herself these targets of doing longer and longer swims. And she is just one example of someone who's gone from being someone who would have been in the lane but struggling to keep the pace to now being part of the group, if you know what I mean, in terms of the whole session.
One more thing. Just tell us a little bit about the 100 hundreds, which I would so love to do myself.
When I started going to Charlton Lee, though, in about 2015, a group of about six of us used to go and train, and we were slower then. And we basically started swimming 5K. So we did like 50 100s off 2 minutes. And then every week we'd do a few more. And then we got to a stage where just before Christmas, we challenged ourselves to do 100. And that was 2015. Sadly, one of the six of that group, Steve Wand, was out cycling in the Easter weekend of 2016 and was knocked off his bike and killed. And since then, every year, I have taken the lead in running 100 hundreds in his memory. And our first memorial swim was December 16. Since then, I think this year marked our seventh year of the memorial swim. This last year just gone with 80 swimmers. And we raised £7,000 for the Kent, Surrey, Sussex Air Ambulance. It's a way of swimmers getting fit, keep getting together, but most importantly, giving back.
Mark, it's been really great catching up. Thank you very much.
Okay. Pleasure.
Cheers.
Mark has a great blog called Reminiscences of a Long Distance Swimmer, which is well worth a check with loads of details about his swims.
You're listening to Swim Out, a podcast about the fabulous world of outdoor swimming.
Dover Channel Training, DCT, is where I did most of my training for my channel swims and definitely where I found my channel tribe. When I first went down to the beach in Dover Harbour in 2007, it was run by Frieda Streeter. She trained her daughter, Alison Streeter, the former Queen of the Channel, who first swam the Channel in 1982, and the group grew from there. DCT now is a membership organisation driven by volunteers. Mandy, a Channel relay swimmer herself, is a key part of the beach crew. Hello, Mandy. It's good to have you with us today.
Hi, Vicky. It's lovely to be with you.
So could you start by explaining how a sort of typical day of training at Dover goes?
Swimmers come from all over the world. So sometimes people will come and stay for a couple of weeks. Sometimes people will come each weekend. The first part of the whole journey is getting there.
Once people are there, we expect them on the beach, bright and sparkly, ready for the briefing with all their kit with them, ready to go in the water by 10 to 10. So they will have a briefing, which is different every day because the conditions are different every day. So we look at the weather, we look at what the temperatures are, we look at what people need to do, and then we will build that safety briefing and also around what else is going on, because it's a public area. So we have to take that into account. And everybody's in the water prompt at 10 o'clock. People will go in knowing what's required of them for that session. They will have their feeds organised, so they will then have a set time to come in, which for the first feed will be 2 hours. For relay swimmers, it'll be slightly different, but for soloists, we first see them again at the two-hour mark, and then after that, they get fed every hour on the hour. And if they're late, they don't get fed.
I was never late. Never ever late coming in for my feed. The feed was so important to me that I never ever was late for it. So I swim with a club as well. Do people only do Dover training, or do most people train somewhere else too?
So it's a very mixed group now. Obviously in Frieda's day, it was generally pool swimmers who'd moved on into open water. Now we see people from all walks of life with all sorts of swimming background. So some people will have a club that they swim with. Hopefully everybody's doing winter training.
So what other activities are offered by DCT?
As well as the weekend swims, we have our community calls, which are open to every member. They happen once a week on a Wednesday evening, and people can log in from all over the world and meet for half an hour. One of the team is there to answer questions or to provide advice and guidance on different things. We have a yearly seminar, which this year will run in mid-March. We also have individual bespoke program work, so that will be built around the needs of the individual.
I think that DCT is a really special environment to train in. It's both supportive, serious, and fun. What do you love most about it?
I think it's very much that. It's a community. It's there to provide all sorts of different things for different people. Training is at the core, and we're very serious about the training because we want people to succeed. But in all that seriousness, we also want people to have fun. We want people to enjoy their training because it is a choice. You know, we have to remind people of that when they're having a bad day, that you want to do this. This is something that you've chosen. And we want you to have some positive memories. And we want it to be fun and supportive. And people make lifelong friendships. And they go on to do many swims together in all sorts of other places around the world.
There's quite a bit of dressing up, as far as I remember.
Yeah, so we've had a few seasons where we've introduced some additional things. Sometimes they work as distractions. Sometimes they just help people feel part of things. Expect the unexpected is probably the biggest thing. There'll be times when we'll have fun feeds, we'll have different things going on. We might do timed training or speed training or something that's different. So we try and keep it interesting and motivating for people.
And then when people have done their first six-hour qualifier, you do a little arch for them, don't you?
We do. This came about one summer when we had some people who had really struggled, and we wanted to show them that we really appreciated how much that took from them. We suddenly decided to do this arch, and it's become a little bit of a, I don't know, it's an ongoing thing, isn't it? Everybody wants their arch.
I've not had one.
Have you not?
Never had
one.
You're
going to have to come and do 6 hours with us.
But how can people find out a bit more about DCT?
So DCT has its own website. It's also on Facebook and Twitter. So all you need to do is type in Dover Channel Training or join the Facebook group, where there's thousands, literally thousands of people in our Facebook group from all over the world, people who have done huge amounts of swimming in the past, and newbies, people who are brand new to the scene and want to find out. So there will be somebody there to talk to.
Yes, it is a very friendly place. And I made some really amazing friends down there. Mandy, thank you so much.
It's been great to be here.
Mandy, ending that report. You know, Vicky, I took quite a long break from training at the end of last year for mental health reasons. Recording these interviews and working on this podcast has really inspired and reinvigorated me. I am so excited to start training properly again and working towards my goals for this year. How's your training looking at the moment?
Yeah, I'm doing a lot of work with Ray in the tank. So I'm trying to do a bit less training. And I think Shannon would be glad to hear that there's less garbage mileage from me at the moment. So just trying to get my stroke right and really focus and be mindful of the swimming that I'm doing. Whatever your training method, I mean, I've heard of people swimming the channel who've trained in a tank in the desert. But you've just got to trust yourself to know what's best for you. What are your thoughts, Amy?
It's like I always say to the athletes that I coach, you have to be able to trust in the training that you're doing. As long as you can get to the start line of the swim or the event that you're training towards and trust in what you've done, you'll be able to get to the other side.
The other thing as well with anything is that there will always be some curveballs that come along. So there'll be the shoulder that doesn't behave itself properly, or you'll get struck by a bug. And you just have to roll with that and take that time as a rest period. Thanks to all the guests today for your contributions. And also thank you, Amy, for presenting with me today. It's been heaps of fun working with you. Next time, Mikey and I discuss swimming communities, both old and new, and how they keep us engaged. But for now, it's swim out and swim safe.
Happy swimming all. Bye.
Bye.
Thanks for listening. Let's catch up next month.